This is Lynn Benton Tractor's Newsmakers with Brent DeHart and Dave Bourne. Presented by Les Schwab Tires and sponsored in part by Furbish, a salvage place, and Kennedy Tax Solutions. Live, local talk that matters to you. Now, here's Brent and Dave from the Capital Auto Group Studios, exclusively on 1430 KYKN. Salem is listening.
And welcome to Newsmakers, folks. The weather outside is frightful, but it is a delightful day to live in the Mid-Willamette Valley. Thanks for joining us, Newsmakers. This is the place to be for your noon hour every Monday through Friday to listen to local talk. Local talk about things happening in your community and your region that affects your life. And our guest today, we have Mayor Chuck Bennett here today, my buddy, to talk about the holidays, talk about the homeless. Yes, just few minutes afternoon. I am fantastic. Love this time of year. Even though the weather's dreary, I don't really care. I don't really care that much.
Yeah, no.
It's just a little liquid
just
sunshine.
A little cold rain.
The worst thing about this time of year is the short days. I can live with the rain, but the short days is hard to get stuff done when you feel like it's time to go to bed by 5:30. All right, so you have had, you and the council has been busy contemplating and considering a bunch of different things having to do with camping. Looked like everything was out out there as a possibility.
Yeah, it could have been anything, couldn't it?
For a second there, I thought you were going to
take... You read the paper, it sounded like absolutely anything could happen.
I thought you were going to take all the homeless and put them back in Wallace Marine Park.
Where they came from.
Yeah, that's right. Most of them came from. So I'm like, oh, well, that's an interesting solution. And we'll get to this. We're going to talk a little bit about there's some initiatives of people that want to turn Hillcrest back into a facility that could transition people and so forth. But let's talk about what we're actually doing.
Okay.
What did the mayor and the council decide to do? We know. And the deadline on the 16th held.
Yeah, it did. This has come in several pieces. The first one was a couple weeks ago when the council and a week ago when the council approved a camping ban. You cannot camp on public right of way, publicly owned property. Unless it's designated for camping by the city. City has no designated camping areas, so it's essentially a ban on camping, and that goes into effect Monday. And that means that folks who have tents on sidewalks or the boulevards or anywhere that the city owns are going to be asked to remove their camping equipment and move on. And also, violation for folks to leave unattended personal belongings.
Right.
And those, after a couple hours, will be picked up by the police or some
No matter what you do, you're in a situation where some people, you're going to have people really dislike you about something. You know, people like, well, you're stealing from the homeless if you take away their belongings, or you're not compassionate if you don't let them do whatever it is that they want to do on their own terms, or you're letting down your community and your taxpayers and the quality of life of the non-homeless if you allow the tent cities to persist. And it's just all over the place, and somebody's going to be mad at you. So to find a pragmatic decision that you can stand behind, you know, that's a difficulty. Is this related to the warming shelters, the money that's diverted for the $213,000 was in the news?
No, that's last night's action. So also included with the camping ban was a proposal to have the city staff take a look at potential sites for camps on city-owned property and report back last night.
Right, okay.
They did. The report back included a number of locations, and I'll give you a couple of examples, if that's okay. Cascades Gateway Park.
Where some of them came from.
Fairview Park. River Road Park. Marion Square Park. The Front Street parking lot, which is a parking lot next to the PGE substation, sort of adjacent to Gilbert House, the Children's Museum. Window to the West, which is a large a vacant area that the city uses for parking across Commercial Street from the Civic Center, from the City Hall, rather. Pine Street Triangle, it's a triangle of property the city owns at 1495 Pine Street, kind of right in the middle of the street. Sunny Slope Community Garden Strip, the city owns a strip of land out, I think it's on Sunny Slope, but...
it is south of Kubler, right?
Yeah, and it's a community garden, and Wallace Marine Park Boat Ramp, using the boat ramp area. It's not used heavily. It's a fairly dry area over at Wallace Marine Park. And the green area along Edgewater, between Edgewater and Highway 22 in West Salem, and use that as a homeless camp. And the council took a look at it, looked at the information, received a great deal of discussion from folks who work in the homeless area, whether at Arches, heard from the police chief, heard from a few homeless advocates, a couple of folks who are homeless, with a whole range of different attitudes about it. The information we got was that really an optimal sized camp would be about 40 people, 30 to 40 people. The smaller, the better. And from Arches, got a really interesting discussion on who should be in the camp. And it would be more high-functioning individuals who are aiming toward getting out of a homeless situation and into housing at some point.
Not the hard to house or the refusal to house types.
Yeah, none of those. And then we also kind of at the last minute received a report from Arches that there appeared to be churches, First Presbyterian's the one that comes to mind, that are willing to take in around 120 to 130 homeless individuals in what's called a duration shelter. And that means it would run for a set period of time, say January, February, March, until the weather begins to change. It'd be like a warming shelter. It'd be open in the evening and overnight for people to sleep, and then would close during the day. And it will need to be financially supported because it needs to be staffed both with professional as well as volunteers. The council chose that rather than going to fenced tent camps in our parks. You actually could house more people that way, and fit better, I think, what the council was able to agree upon. So that one will move forward. It's going to cost taxpayers about $213,000.
Oh, okay. So of the 100, because you were saying, you know, a camp and you're looking at 40 people, and that doesn't take care of the people that we already see camping around Arches on North Commercial. Mm-hmm. So that was like, well, that's only a partial solution, especially if they're only people who are trying to transition out of homelessness, right?
Yeah.
So now that you've got 100 plus, you're looking at 100 plus being able to go into the church, does that get rid of all the tents?
No. No, 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 no. I think the misunderstanding of how this all works is that somehow everybody is looking to move indoors or out of the cold or out of a tent. That is not the case, we were told last night by the folks who work in the homeless arena, that there are folks who really are not going to choose to go indoors. And so there will be some... probably some dispersed camping that's going to occur. We've got 1,000 people who are unhoused in the community.
At least. So, and that's going to be the thing. I think what the city then is saying, we don't want you to camp here, but we're going to provide options for you.
Yeah.
And if you do not accept them, really, that's on them. I sound like a cold-hearted type, but you're offering humane solutions, and
we're offering
services and programs,
yeah,
and a transition and a way out. So if they do not choose it, or if they flat out refuse it, what can you do?
The other thing we agreed, we're asking staff to prepare a report on how to institute a kind of car camping system if a nonprofit, generally a church, would like to allow people to come into their parking lot for a safe place to park their car and sleep. This is a fairly common. We have hundreds of people who are living in their cars, we are told.
Okay, well, let's talk about that right after the break. We've got to take a quick break. We've got Chuck Bennett, the mayor of the city of Salem, here with us on this beautiful Tuesday. And we're going to talk about a city that seemingly has solved their homeless crisis. And you always look for that example. So stick with us. This is Newsmakers with Brent and Dave on 1430 KYKN. Salem is listening.
This is Lynn Benton Tractor's Newsmakers with Brent and Dave, presented by Les Schwab Tires and sponsored in part by Furbish, a salvage place, and Kennedy Tax Solutions. Now, let's go back to the Capital Auto Group studios on 1430 KYKN. Salem is listening.
This segment of Newsmakers is proudly brought to you by Color Tile of Salem and Sylvan Learning Center.
So, Mayor Chuck Bennett, are you going over the river and to the woods to any visit any relatives and extended family this holiday?
Yes, I am.
All right. That sounds exciting. I know we won't have you as a guest for a few weeks, so I'm hoping you are going to see relatives that you love and can't wait to see.
Yep.
And traveling out of state?
Be traveling.
Yeah, good. Very exciting. I know I'll be flying to see my own mother out of state. I'll be driving to see my mother-in-law in state. Yeah, it'll be fun holidays. So thank you.
And yeah, thank
you. I hope you enjoy that. We're talking before the break with Mayor of Salem, Chuck Bennett, about homelessness, that the camping ban has not been delayed. It goes into effect on Monday. And that the Presbyterian First Pres, as we call it.
And there may be another church as well, and I just can't remember.
Another partner willing to take in over 100 people out of the cold until it is the change of the seasons. It also provides a central location for services to come to them.
Yeah.
So hopefully there'll be some the impacts that we're currently seeing is really visible, and the difficulties that the people are having, at least they'll have an alternative. So Medicine Hat Alberta is the article I tried.
Medicine Hat Alberta.
Yeah, Medicine Hat Alberta was in was in the news, and I bring it up because they've reduced their homeless population by 91%. I mean, it's so hard to find an example. I asked this question of our police chief, our recently retired police chief, Jerry Moore. Is there a model out there that is working? Is there a model out there that we're not doing that somebody's really successful? And he was not familiar. And then I find this news article. It's a smaller town, 60,000 people, and they have reduced their homeless population by 91% over a number of years. And the theory that they use is housing first.
Yeah.
And that's something I know you've heard, you've talked about in the past, that the first goal is to give them shelter.
Right.
Not, hey, let's solve their addiction issues, let's solve their mental health issues, let's solve, you know, X, Y, and Z society issues. Let's not put a porta potty. Let's get them in housing first.
Right.
So that sounds like you're on a pretty good track.
Well, we think so. We have a what we call our housing rental assistance program. It's a program I proposed 3 years ago when I became mayor. We've housed well over 200. I think we're at 230 some now. Folks in the program, it's for the hardest to house. People who've been on the street for 10 years, had health problems, bad credit. Might have had a conviction, as well as addiction or mental health problems. Mm-hmm. I mean, it was kind of the full package. And we've had a number of folks moving through that. We used private landlords, worked with our private landlord community to find housing for these folks rather than putting the money into just building units. We used existing units that way.
Let's talk about the money a little bit. In Medicine Hat, they found that it costs about $20,000 a year for them to move these homeless people into the program. I did get a number. It was like 900 people in Medicine Hat, 900 people over about 10-year period of time. But it costs $100,000 as fiscal impact if they're living in the streets. So yeah. We talk about the difficulty of the city budget because the city has not had the social service role and a homeless solution role, and trying to find money for it in a city budget is a challenge.
Yeah.
But we've seen recently in the news, we've heard the police chief talk about it, you've talked about it, that we're already spending $5 million.
Well, in the course of a police officers work. They're going to have contact, and they've been sort of tracking it to kind of understand how much time is taking in that area, as well as with fire and other services we offer. But I'm not sure. I'd have to look real carefully at how Medicine Hat's doing it. They are in an interesting country in Canada in terms of what kind of services comparable federal government takes on, their comparable state government or provincial government takes on. How has that all worked together? We do not have a lot of support from the state, almost none from the feds. You know, it's that kind of difference. We don't have a healthcare system like Canada. We don't have, you know, they have a different kind of social network. It's a more socialist type state in terms of providing the kinds of human services that we tend to think of as more privately handled, you know.
Things that intersect, and we talk a lot here at Newsmakers about things that practically lower the cost of doing government, like having a central police facility,
yeah.
Right, and having people not having to travel across town to do a basic element of their job. So two things. Lastly, on this Medicine Hat article, which I think we're going to see as well in Salem, is the two things that plummeted, they found over the years, is number of police car calls, right, and people in emergency room visits. Those have plummeted in the last 10 years because the community has solved with a housing first kind of philosophy.
Well, it'll be interesting to see how it works. We're seeing an enormous number of emergency room calls, mm-hmm. Which is a cost against the hospital system, against our healthcare system, and also a substantial number of police calls, as well as fire calls, because of our fire. These are our first responders in terms of emergency medical treatment and things like that. So it's one we are trying to move ahead on. I think if we look at tent camping, we will look at it in conjunction with Housing First. There's a lot of social service and training that kind of goes on in advance of someone moving off the street after 10 or 15 years in a tent to moving into an apartment. Some of those kinds of educational training programs can occur as easily outside of the housing as we move along. Part of it's just getting enough units for the number of people that mm-hmm. need housing. We just don't have them. And I know there's discussion of Hillcrest. We've looked at that over the years. We've had a couple of looks at that at the city. It does not pencil out, I'm afraid. And I sure understand how it looks good, but that's kind of in the why don't you use Kmart? Why don't you use Nordstrom's? Why don't you use...
Let's flesh that out a little bit. When you say it doesn't pencil out, for whom?
For the city to buy it, to bring it up to any kind of human life standard, safety. It's full of asbestos. I mean, there's a batch of things that are wrong with that site that will require substantial investment. And the city just doesn't have that kind of money. I mean, it's just not there. It doesn't exist.
But as a community initiative, do you think it's a possibility? If it's not, you know, a city-run, city purchase?
Anybody can do it. We certainly will encourage anyone who wants to do it. But the reality is the city is not financially structured to put this on.
Yeah.
So if say you and a group of friends would like to go together and produce about $5 million to do the work, buy the property, do the work, and bring it up to some level of standard, and then pay the costs of staffing it year round on a long-term basis, I think there'd be tremendous support for you. I would hold your coat as you did that work.
I got to go get my Powerball ticket, Hannah.
Yeah.
So is this a case where, you know what you should do? You should do this with a property you do not even own.
That's correct. Right? We get a lot of that. Yeah, you know, like I mentioned, Nordstrom. the one I love is turn Kmart into the old Kmart store, which we don't own, which is under lease for someone else. But turn that into a barracks of some kind. You can stack. And I've had people literally say this to me. You can stack people three police high, you know, three tiers high in that place. And it kind of, I'm sorry, it doesn't work. It just doesn't work. Number one, it's not ours. Number two, we don't have, again, we don't have the money to bring that up to any kind of appropriate standard. And number three, really, barrack style, I'm not sure that's the answer either.
That's funny. I love it when people are like, you know what you should do with somebody else's money with somebody else's property.
There's an enormous
I have a solution,
amount of that.
And then they're all mad, you know.
I get emails every day with solutions, but they all involve someone else's money, someone else's property, and somehow forcing, and I'm not sure how you do this, forcing homeless people to subject themselves to whatever solution you have come up with for them. And all in all, I think we have to be a little more methodical and listen much more to the experts who work in this area.
The concept of, you know, having the camp, it was really problematic in terms of, and I read an article or two about it, in terms of, well, now you're suddenly taking the liability for all of these things. And is it safe? Is it not safe enough? Should you have known? That was good language. Do you know or should you have known and get sued over these things? And just the ongoing programming costs that's simply not in the civic, not in the budget, and some would argue not in the civic role.
Yeah, it's a difficult problem. And you're really hitting on, we can sometimes find the capital to do some work. But those operations dollars are very expensive because you're hiring people who are professionals. You're hiring social workers. And that's just before you can get the number of volunteers you need to get who will commit to a long-term regular show up every day and assist in doing this. But you have to have some professional counselors, social workers, medical folks in all of these areas. And it is expensive.
All right, we're going to take a break. Dave is back from being on location.
Woo-hoo!
And we're going to chat a little bit about a few we'll do the hot topics for a little segment, and then we're going to be talking about Geppetto's.
I got a quick question for the mayor, though.
Right now.
Right now.
Oh, gosh.
I'm sorry. Got an email.
Did you?
Mm-hmm. Says, ask the mayor why they stopped hanging Christmas decorations downtown. Seems like a lack of Christmas spirit downtown these days.
Yeah, that's not correct. They wore out. This used to be funded by a business group, and they stopped being interested, apparently, in doing Christmas.
Will the city?
Will
the city pick it up?
With what?
Oh, I don't know.
Okay, I have volunteers. Get out that checkbook.
No volunteers.
There's no volunteers for that.
Oh.
We can get them put up. The problem is we don't have all the materials. We don't have agreement on how it's going to work. I've been talking to the downtown business group about it, and I complain a lot about this, a lot about it. I think it's nuts to pass up your Christmas season without making your downtown look seasonal.
Right.
But not my call to put them up, not my call to spend public money for this either. So,
all right, Rich, thanks for the email.
But Rich has got a really good point, and he ought to talk to the merchant he deals with downtown and encourage them that they get more involved in their downtown and help participate in putting up
Maybe he'll get it going.
There
Who
we
knows?
Go. Don't say, why doesn't somebody?
Yeah.
Just go out and do it.
Go do it.
Thank
why
you.
Don't you? Yeah.
Thank you, Mayor Bennett. Appreciate you being here. Going to take a quick break. Come back with Brent and Dave. And then there's a surprise. We're going to be talking about Geppetto's here in just a minute. This is Newsmakers on 1430 KYKN.
Len Benton Tractor's Newsmakers, presented by Les Schwab Tires, continues in the Capital Auto Group studios. Here's Brent DeHart and Dave Bourne on 1430 KYKN. Salem is listening.
This is Rich Kansky, and this segment of Newsmakers is brought to you by Green Acres Landscape.
And welcome back to Newsmakers, folks.
Yeah, baby. Welcome back.
This is Brent DeHart with Dave Bourne. We enjoy talking to Mayor Chuck Bennett. It seems like we're talking about homelessness an awful lot.
Number one problem.
Number one problem on top of people's minds. And, mm-hmm. and the landscape is changing in terms of what are going to be the solutions. And at least we're putting some things in motion, which is nice. I was struck a little bit. I was at the Chamber of Commerce last week, their public policy meeting, and Jerry Moore was there. I want to say Police Chief Jerry Moore, but he's like acting police chief because he officially retired at the end of November. And we also had a commander from Marion County Sheriffs, and they were talking about this issue. The number one takeaway was most of this is not a criminal in nature.
No,
criminal
it's
in
not.
Nature. We get calls, a lot of calls, and that cost that they talk about, over $4 million when it comes to the City of Salem Police Department, they're calls for situations that are not criminal in nature, but the police are the ones that get the calls. Really interesting perspective. No solutions. Obviously, some frustration there.
Mm-hmm.
Everybody would like it to be better, but as we often talk about, and the mayor said during the break, you know, it's going to be some combination of solutions. So another thing that struck me, speaking of the meeting, the First Baptist Church was represented there, and that is right downtown, if you're not familiar, folks. And we know the First Baptist Church here at KYKN because we do some remotes right down there and some mm-hmm. of their enterprises. So they've got First Lube. And
I was there this morning.
And the coffee shop.
Yeah, North Block Coffee.
North Block Coffee. And the complaint was, and I saw it later that day, there's people camping right up against the car, you know, travel lane where people would come through to buy their coffee.
Mm.
It's really crowded. It's really like in your face. And their sales have plummeted. And
well, yeah.
They said, this is absolutely an impact, not just to our sales, but to our ministry. So you've got a ministry where they're helping people earn honest dollar, get some job skills, get back on their feet, and they can't do it because the homeless people are encroaching and making it an uncomfortable situation for customers. Because he said, we used to have lines, cars lined up, mm-hmm. and now there's no cars.
Wow.
Can we do something about this? And that was a question to the police chief. And he said, no, basically no. Well, you can't until this ordinance takes effect next week. So I'm always going to fight back, folks, where I don't want the discussion to devolve in. If you don't agree with me about what to do with the homeless, then you're a non-compassionate person.
Right.
You don't care about people and you're a terrible person and you have a black card if you don't. And there's always two sides to that. And there's always many, many opinions about how they should be treated. Other than using the word humanely, what is the right solution? But the right solution right now is not to have them impact First Baptist Church and their ministries and the businesses.
Right there.
You know, can really...
You know, what's weird is that there's always been homeless.
Mm-hmm.
But I wonder why it's so suddenly prevalent now when the unemployment rate is so low and anybody could get a job. Why is the homeless situation so big now?
I think, and this was addressed as well, and we're talking, I'm referring to the Salem Area Chamber's public policy meeting. It was addressed a little bit. I mean, we fleshed out Wallace Marine Park, so the problem was not as concentrated. And it was spread out. It was more in the trees and in the river. And we spread them out of Minto Brown Park. And we moved them out of under the bridge and the spiral ramp up to the bridge. And
I
all these
that.
Things. And all of these things ended up consolidating people into a much more visible central place. So that's part of it. And I don't know. I mean, it's more time than we have today. Maybe we'll talk about it on Thursday.
But it seems like there's just so many more homeless.
It seems like it, but that doesn't necessarily mean that there
true,
actually
though?
Is.
Yeah.
Yeah. And that was definitely, it was a question that came up. It got bantered around a little bit. I think we do have more than we had in the 70s. We have more people dropping out in the 80s and the 90s, so it seems to be growing, right?
Mm-hmm.
And the other thing is, do we have more, or are we inviting them? Are we inviting the lifestyle by saying, you can do whatever you want, like, say, in San Francisco or in Portland?
You mean like back in the 60s?
No,
do whatever
like
you want?
Right now. You can do whatever you want. You can camp wherever you want. We're going to bring
but
you
they
food.
Can now,
We're
though.
Going to bring you social services. We're going to bring you that. And so in a way, it's like Oregon or some of these other cities are competing for the word to get out, and more homeless will come, right? So that was brought up at the meeting. It's like you can put up a tent city. You can put up a facility and invite all these, you know, a tent encampment, right?
Mm-hmm.
But do you think that people in Eugene won't hear about it and then they'll come up because there's a tent encampment with all these services?
Sure.
And they can camp right here and it's free and they're going to bring you food and showers and da, da, da. And so in that way, if you offer too much in amenities, you are competing to have all of the homeless come here.
Mm-hmm.
So, and you might think that that sounds far-fetched, folks, but
it's not.
I heard about it indirectly, but pretty closely. My wife worked in social services, and she heard it from the straight from the horse's mouth when she was talking to some of her clients, and there's like a sibling. Oh, you moved here to Oregon from Arizona. Why did you move? Oh, well, because we can get more money quicker in Oregon. The answer was, because my sister told me I could arrive on Thursday and get food stamps on Friday. And because the benefits are rich, that brings people who want the benefits. You're competing for people who cannot take care of themselves who want to have government services by offering a rich package. It's not just for Oregonians, because we allow anyone who crosses into the border to receive the social services.
Because it's a sanctuary state.
So where is the balance? So the good news is, because we were a little worried that the current city council was going to delay the enforcement of the camping ban, and that did not happen.
Right.
So I think that is a positive sign. Also, at this meeting, a shout out to Reed Sund, who showed up and, you know, attempting to be in the mix in the conversation and get educated. Reed is running for city council in Salem in Ward 7. So that is Southwest Oregon, and we're going to have him on the show. I know he's been on
Southwest Salem, right?
Southwest Salem, yes. Yeah.
You said Oregon.
I did.
I'm like, wow, that's a big part of the city council.
Thanks for keeping me on my toes there.
You're welcome.
It's not the first or last time I'll have a slip of the tongue, folks.
Certainly not mine.
So Reed's running, and he pointed out how quickly the council went from a sit-lie ordinance to, no, we're not going to do that, and no, we're not going to do that, this, the next step, and then it just got watered down and watered down. And he's like, it's like whiplash how quickly they backed away from a solution that he liked and a lot of people in downtown and city wanted. So I know he's been on Wednesdays with Denise. We're going to have him on the show soon, and certainly during the campaign. I think he's got a good head on his shoulders. So Reed Sund. If you don't live in Ward 7, you can't vote for him in the spring.
But it's good to hear what he has to say.
Think about walking for him.
Hey,
think about writing a check for him. Mm-hmm. Think about posting social media messages for him. If you do not like what the city council is doing with the homeless solution, with the proposals to pay the city council, with a bag ban and
scrapping the bridge.
On the bridge, minor little things like no transportation
minor little things
infrastructure.
Like that. Yeah.
It's something to consider. All right, we're going to take a quick break because we've got a special guest, someone who's been around the community. Actually, her whole family's been around the community for a long time.
Sure.
So we're going to welcome after the break, Julie Hoy.
Sounds good.
All right. Thanks for sticking with us, folks. This is Brent DeHart with Dave Bourne. We'll be right back on 1430 KYKN.
This is Lynn Benton Tractors Newsmakers with Brent and Dave, presented by Les Schwab Tires and sponsored in part by Furbish, a salvage place, and Kennedy Tax Solutions. Now, let's go back to the Capital Auto Group studios on 1430 KYKN. Salem is listening.
This segment of Newsmakers is proudly brought to you by Sylvan Learning Center.
And welcome back to Newsmakers, folks. In case there's any doubt that Dave and Brent can be bribed by good food, can I put that to rest right now? On Fridays,
we have Casey's
Pizza. And Julie Hoy is joining us in the studio. And I don't know. Julie, your name comes about here and there across in the community, and you've been involved, and now you're an owner. You and your husband are a owner of a restaurant, and you brought us some food from Geppetto's.
Yes,
so,
we did.
I am very perturbed, actually. I'm aggravated, I want you to know.
Because you haven't eaten yet?
Because I haven't eaten
he's
yet.
He's hangry.
Hangry.
Dave Bourne was coming back from he's coming back from being on location, and he had
first
a chance to,
plus,
to sample your food.
It was delicious.
And I have to wait till after the show.
I'm going to have more.
So, what am I looking forward to after the show? You have
We have Geppetto's pasta, meat sauce, and house-made meatballs for you.
Oh, they're
we
delish.
We have our house-made marinara and pasta as well. We have a salad with our house-made creamy garlic and Italian dressings, and our house-made focaccia bread with our house-made garlic butter.
Wow.
David, I think you have to finish the segment. I got to go.
Yeah.
Nice.
Hey, let's talk a little bit about the restaurant and how you and your husband came into ownership of it. And you've had a little bit of a wobbly start, right?
A little bit. It's been good.
So 2.5 years ago, you said, hey, we're going to buy this.
Yeah, actually, I prayed for a miracle for my husband. And next thing I know, he came home from hunting and said, what would you think if we took out our retirement savings and offered to buy this place for my brother?
Wow.
And I thought, uh-oh. I told God I'd do anything, and this might be the answer. Huh. So that was probably February of 2017. He knew that his little brother was thinking of selling the restaurant at the time, and went to him and said, hey, we'd like to buy it. And next thing you know, the ball started rolling from February. May 1st, I started following David around with a clipboard, writing down everything he did because nobody ever had.
Oh.
And then I followed his footsteps 100%. And that was May 1st. June 1st, we owned it.
Wow.
And it went very fast.
May 1st to June 1st. Wow.
Yeah.
It has David, your brother-in-law.
Mm-hmm.
So has he been around to help transition and teach and train?
He was there for a time, yeah.
Oh, good.
And but I tell you, the hero of late is the original owner of Geppetto's, Tom Barsotti, who still comes to the restaurant to dine with his lovely wife, Glynis. He has been instrumental in sort of keeping us on track with what they originally intended the food to be. Mm. He was in actually just the other day. He dropped in on the chef who's there during the daytime and wanted to help him make the raviolis just so.
Wow. That is impressive.
Now, let's get some perspective here, folks. He opened that more than 3 decades ago.
Yeah, 45 years.
45 years ago. And he's still coming like, by the way, you're not doing it right.
the funny part is he gets calls from his friends who come and dine in. And they'll call and say, something's wrong with the ravioli.
Wow. You know?
And yeah, so it's good. I mean, we made a fresh batch last Saturday, and they came out great. It's just awesome. And he came in to talk to that cook about the final presentation of that plate of Ma's ravioli. Mm. When it goes out, how much should the ravioli be cooked? How long? And how should it be plated? You know, you get that sauce just right so the raviolis peek out from under the sauce.
Now you're just being mean.
Yep.
We're talking to Julie Hoy from Geppetto's. She and her husband own the place. I got to confess, I haven't been to Geppetto's in a long time. Let's remind everybody where it is.
It's at 616 Lancaster Drive Northeast, kind of between Office Max and Fagan's, in that hometown buffet strip.
Right.
That little red door, we have no windows. We still have the little red door that is Geppetto's.
So on Lancaster, between State and Center, on the east side of the street there, you can still have that home family, Italian family meal. So, for over 40 years. So the fire, let's touch on the fire real quick.
Sure.
Because when you took over in June 1st, you didn't expect to have that kind of setback.
No, we didn't. It was actually...
Had you paid your insurance premium yet?
Thank God, yes. We were all paid up. It was March 15th, the night after we closed. We're just minding our own business, sleeping. At 2 o'clock in the morning, the security company calls and says, your front door's been breached. And we're like, oh no, somebody's broken in. So we hurry up and get dressed and head on down there. And it was actually the fire department. And there was a fire in our area, but they couldn't tell us where. So we didn't know if it was inside our space or what. Turned out it was arson fire. in the alley, someone had dropped off mattresses behind Mattress World. Somebody came along and lit them on fire. Fire went up the into the eave, caught the roof on fire, and moved forward across Mattress World parallel to us. So we didn't have actual fire damage, flame damage. We filled with smoke and soot.
Oh, my. Which is equally problematic sometimes.
Yeah, it really was. It really was.
Especially for a restaurant.
Yes. We had to get rid of all of our food. Every speck of salt and pepper, everything was gone. We had to lose any wallpaper. Carpet had to go. All the furniture had to be removed and cleaned. ServPro did a great job for us in that regard. All the venting was cleaned from the ceiling to the floor. So when we reopened, the restaurant was as clean as it was when it opened 45 years ago.
Wow. And how long were you closed down?
We were closed only for 6 weeks.
Sweet.
That's a fast turnaround.
That it was very. It only happened that way. That's a whole nother story for another day.
And you were able to hold on to your staff.
We held on to staff because my dear cousin who drove the fire claim with the insurance company found a way to get them paid. And everyone kept working. We all worked toward getting reopened as quickly as possible. We've got staff that have been there a long time. One guy who's been there for about 30 years. We have a Thursday, Friday, Saturday bartender who's been there for 23 years. And the list goes on and on. There's just wonderful people who really care about what Tom and his mom came to Salem in 1974 to create. And that's a family-style restaurant with home-cooked recipes that are just meant to satisfy.
That's awesome.
All right, so Dave Bourne's coming in. What kind of meals are you going to taunt him with?
Oh,
Let's see. He comes in.
My favorite's lasagna. But
the lasagna, Ma's lasagna is fabulous. We still do it the way she wanted it done.
Nice.
The pizza, Chicago-style pizza, thin crust, thick crust, deep dish stuffed.
Ooh.
Calzones and strombolis.
Nice.
All right, so let's be. All right, so you brought it up. You stepped into this. What's the difference between a calzone and a stromboli?
Oh, that's kind of easy.
Okay.
It's the same amount of crust.
Okay.
But a calzone is kind of shaped like a half of a pie.
Uh-huh.
And it's I don't know why the crust seems thicker. A stromboli is more like an inside-out pizza, almost like a burrito with pizza on the inside.
Ooh.
I still don't understand.
Inside the calzone is, you can get whatever you want. But yeah, they're shaped differently. They're wrapped differently.
Okay.
And they bake a little differently.
Oh.
The stromboli crust seems thinner. And it comes out, like I said, just like a yummy
burrito.
Italian burrito.
Mm.
Dave and I like our food here. It's one of those things that's hard to combine that wonderful marinara sauce and some garlic and some butter and some pasta and all of those things and not come up with a delicious dish coming out of Geppetto's. So, if it's been a long time since you've been there, you should go visit the Hoys.
Yes.
Local ownership.
Yep.
Come took on a risk.
Yep.
Kept a Salem institution open.
Yeah.
Hurdled a setback, and here we are. So
it's a good thing.
It's a good thing. You enjoying yourself?
Very much so. Maybe it's hard work. I'm not going to lie.
Oh, yeah.
Restaurant businesses.
Hard.
People are crazy. But if they're not crazy, they get crazy.
There's so many different jobs to do. And if you're the owner, you're going to have to know how to do all of them, right?
That's true. I made pizza dough and bread this morning.
Really?
And I'll go back and make a batch of house-made minestrone soup.
Sounds really good.
We're talking to Julie Hoy. Thanks for coming by the studio. And if you're listening and you're looking for, and you're suddenly hungry like I am, Geppetto's online caster between Center and State. Thanks for being here. We're going to do it again. You've been listening to Newsmakers on 1430 KYKN. Salem's listening.
This has been Lynn Fenton Tractor's Newsmakers with Brent DeHart and Dave Bourne. Presented by Les Schwab Tires and sponsored in part by Furbish, a salvage place, and Kennedy Tax Solutions. Live local talk that matters to you from the Capital Auto Group studios exclusively on 1430 KYKN. Salem is listening.